shitting the bed. Whirly, early, whirly girlies, welcome the fuck back.
We're so excited to be back. We have been shitting the bed when it comes to posting, but we're fucking back, and we swear this time.
Don't get in our bed because there's shit in it.
We recently just did our first collab. I don't know if you guys saw it, with Reno Gold.
Special guest. And that was really a big stepping stone for us, but it was more complicated than you would think it would be.
Yes.
Because we have our little ghetto little studio.
Yeah.
And we have our little two little mics.
Yeah.
And we have our little setup.
Yeah.
And that just doesn't work for the prestigious.
No. And so to say that we are happy to be back in our little ghetto table chairs that squeak, in my tiny little house with just the two of us, we're very happy to be back.
That would be an understatement. It feels so good. We feel refreshed. You know, obviously we've said this before. Refreshed. Why do I speak like that? We've said this before, but it's like sometimes you get a little burnt out, and we don't want that to relay into our content at all. So we took a little break. The new year happened. We didn't even do a New Year's pod. Like, we didn't talk about New Year's resolutions.
I even bought a bunch of like fun things to wear on our heads and like cups, like disco ball cups to drink out of. And then we didn't end up filming.
It just like didn't happen.
Yeah.
And then I was traveling. Shocker. I was sick. Shocker.
Uh-huh.
Now we're back. And can I just say, I just want to start this podcast off by saying I cannot fucking wait for dry January to be over.
Oh, yeah.
I have a glass of water. It's sounding bad. It's sounding like I have a problem. I don't. It's just like annoying.
Yeah.
I want to have a glass of wine. You set this expectation. I know we talked about this briefly in our collaboration pod, but I'm going to touch on it again.
Yeah, go for it.
Because I'm pressed.
Pop off.
I'm fucking pressed.
Oh.
You set this expectation for yourself, and you don't want to fail. You want to meet your goals. You build this big wall in your head, and you're like, okay, well, I have to. And then it feels like if you don't, you're almost like, I do have a problem.
Yeah. It's like with anything. If you make a promise to yourself, and sometimes like we overcommit ourselves to things right out of the gates, and then we, even though it's like an unreasonable expectation, we feel so bad if we break that promise to ourselves.
You made a commitment, and then you like, if you don't do it, it almost beats up your confidence and your self-esteem because you didn't do something you said you were going to do.
Yeah. And that's with everything in life. But with dry January, like, I understand it's a great thing, you know? And I think both of us, I mean, I have been doing it vicariously through her, because the only time I ever drink is really when
she's like, what am I going to drink alone?
Like,
I'm like, with, no.
Like, yeah. So tonight I'm drinking some OJ.
Mississippi
and
mud water.
Yeah, for sure. But we were just discussing how easy it is to just have one drink at every social event you go to. Like, everything you do is an occasion to drink.
And everything.
Yeah. And then we were talking about how having one drink almost isn't worth it because you don't really feel it. It's kind of like you just feel like shit afterwards. It makes you tired. You don't sleep as good. Like, you feel the effects of it even if you don't get drunk.
And so, the calories and the money, it's just like so unnecessary.
So we were saying, like, if you're going to drink, we want to drink.
Drink.
Drink, drink.
Like, get fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds terrible. But
it's true. It's like, if I want to drink, I want to have like a couple glasses of wine and like have like, you know, a day off the next day.
Catch a little buzz.
Where I can like feel hungover and not have like a bunch of responsibilities to like take care of the next day. So ultimately, I feel like drinking less throughout the week and like finding happiness and fun in going out with people and doing things and not needing to drink is like a good thing. But when it comes to dry January and like we're here and we're trying to sit and catch up because we haven't really seen each other recently and we want to just like sip on a glass of wine
and just like get the vibes rolling and like get the giggles going. But you know, something that this has taught me is I don't need it because like I'm still here. I'm still in a good mood. I'm still giggling. Like, I'm fucking fine.
Yeah.
I didn't need it to survive.
Well, I think like, because when we have the availability to drink or when it is an option, it's so easy to be like, oh, we're tired, let's have a drink, because we know it will immediately snap us back into
pep in
like
your step.
But truthfully, we are fine and we don't need it, and maybe it is a good lesson for both of us.
Well, that's what Allie's asking me, because like I've been bringing up dry January every 45 seconds. Like, oh, I can't wait to have my next drink. I sound like, I really sound bad. It's not that bad. But Allie was like, Mad, do you really drink that much?
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I don't drink at home. I don't drink alone. I don't drink when I'm sad. I don't drink to deal with my problems. Not anymore. And but I did like realize I went to like 4 social things. Like, I've had a very busy social week this week. And if I wasn't on dry January, I would have drank every day this week.
Yeah.
That adds up your anxiety, your mental health, your physical health, my desire to go to the gym, my desire to wake up early. Like, it adds up. So this has been really good for me to realize you don't have to have a drink every time.
Yeah.
You can have a drink sometimes, but yeah, you don't have to every time.
And I think the hard part with that too is like, once Dry January is over, when do you determine if you can have a drink at a social event? Because I feel like it's still so ingrained in us that like, oh, I'm going to a birthday dinner, I'm going to have a drink.
Gonna have a drink.
We're going to film the podcast, we're going to have a drink. I'm going to go to watch the football game, I'm going to have a drink. You know what I mean?
It's always, like you said it best, there's always a reason to have a drink. I think moderation, trying to teach yourself like to break the habitualness of alcohol.
I think the main thing too about Dry January, which is very eye-opening, is how much better you really feel. Like when you really cut out alcohol, I haven't cut out alcohol, so I'm just speaking like, because I'll go like a couple weeks without drinking and then I'll drink one day, not even a lot. And then I do feel tired and my anxiety is worse. I'm not sleeping as good. And maybe I don't connect the dots that it's from the alcohol, but it probably is, because when you go a long time without drinking, you just feel so much better and you're able to handle so much more in your life. I think Dry January is helpful in the sense that you're able to remember how much better you feel when you don't drink. So maybe if you're at a social event and there's alcohol available, you're gonna say to yourself like, well, I really want to have a good day tomorrow, or it's not worth it to have
a drink
tonight.
So I don't need to.
Yeah.
Well, and you make such a good point. Connecting the dots is so difficult when you're drinking constantly, because you're like, okay, this is just how I always feel.
Yeah.
But that's something that I've definitely realized over the last month, is my mood is really stable. It's not like I would ever...
She literally texted me 2 days ago, are you on your period? Because I'm a raging cunt right
I literally
now.
Said, I am cunt.
And I love that you track your period
through you,
because she's on birth control, so she doesn't actually get a period, but she's for some reason thinks that whenever I'm on my period that it's...
I figure we have to be synced up. She's the female I spend the most time with. I don't like...
I'm sure we are sometimes, but like, I'm sure we're not always.
Usually, well, usually if you're a bitch, I'm a bitch.
It's true though. It does usually track, because actually I think we are synced up.
Well, because I don't bleed, but I still have symptoms, right? And so it's like, I'm trying to understand. Sometimes I gaslight myself. Like, why am I so cranky?
Sometimes my mood has been so stable. Sometimes I gaslight myself too, and I actually have a period.
And you're
then
bleeding.
And then my period comes, and I'm like, okay, it makes
that
sense.
That makes sense.
Sorry, I did not mean to interrupt you.
But that's okay. It's tangent pod.
This is the whole point of a podcast.
The whole point of a podcast. But what I was saying is that trying to connect the dots, and that it actually does affect you, the thing that I have taken out of this the most is, it has been really nice not being hungover on the weekends. I would have a drink throughout the week and maybe I don't feel good, whatever, but I can still manage. Yeah. But then like, I would go out on the weekends and drink.
Yeah.
Like my Sunday is destroyed.
Yeah. Then Monday, God forbid, you want to like start your week off right.
Trying to get back into the swing of things, trying to get back in the gym, trying to get back to work. Everything is just like so much harder.
And then you finally feel good again by Friday and it's time to drink again.
But then I'm like, dead seriously, how can I sit here and say this and be like, I cannot wait to have my next drink?
Yeah. Well, I think when you can't have something, it's like we always want what we can't have. So having it be something that you cannot have, I think makes you want it more. So maybe now that you've done this, and once you finish this, which you're like so close to being done, you'll have more of a grasp on it and an understanding for why you don't want to drink.
Or need to.
But yeah, having the option to, it won't feel like you want it as much maybe.
It's big ass hardcore sounding like I'm an alcoholic right now.
No, but like I get it. I mean, here's the thing about Madison. She just hangs out with a lot of people. She's always out doing something at some event, some occasion, some birthday dinner, some
traveling somewhere, doing something.
And honestly, like I don't drink that much, but I don't do anything. Like I'm at home and I still like, you know, I always have a bottle of wine. Like I'll have like a glass like 3-4 times a week. Maybe obviously like the last couple weeks I haven't really done that, but it's not unlikely for me to like want a glass of wine at home at night. But if I were going out, I would 100% be having a casual drink.
You would want a drink. And the last thing I'll say about this before we move on is, it was kind of validating for me having conversations with other people at these social events that I've been at all week who are also doing Dry January, listening to them being like, yeah, like I was drinking a bottle of wine a night and like I was, you know, this is weird for me. And like being like, okay, so it's not just me that's going through this right now.
And you know what? Unfortunately, alcohol is so normalized. Like we know it's bad for us. We know all the effects are terrible. Like we always feel like shit. Everyone knows this.
And we just drink it.
But it's so normalized in the US, which is funny because cigarettes are so frowned upon, but like alcohol is, in my opinion, just as bad.
Right. Absolutely.
If not worse.
Like causes like 7 types of cancer. Yeah. It's like the leading cause of death.
Ruins
cirrhosis.
People's lives. Yeah.
You know, I had this existential thought the other day when I was Dry January.
Sober.
Yeah. So when I was so sober. We are drinking poison.
Yeah.
Like it's a neurotoxin that affects your ability to have cognitive response, to have motor skills. It's poison.
Yeah. And like another point to that is, we do, I don't know if you guys have seen some of the ads we do for a company called Astra that we work with. We filmed them before we filmed the podcast, and we didn't drink tonight. Normally it takes us like freaking
a decade, millennia
to get like our reels made for them. And tonight we both just pumped those out so seamlessly.
So quickly, efficiently. Yeah. Like you just don't stutter on your words, your brain, your thoughts.
Madison's like, you know, I will say you do better things. You're better at things when you don't drink.
You're better at things. You're more consistent with things. Yeah. My relationship is just, I mean, my relationship is always good, but this month, good fuck. I'm like, it's so good. Like, damn, am I going to go back to drinking after I said all this shit?
100%
It's just like, you know, sometimes when you have a couple drinks, you like pick a little bitch fit fight for no reason or whatever. Like, it just hasn't happened. So anyway, move on from the topic. But if you're in the same boat as me, just know we'll figure out moderation together, maybe. Or maybe we'll be one of those people that's completely sober. Who fucking knows? We'll find out.
Or maybe we'll drink all year long until January every year.
And then I'll do this every year like I do every year.
Every year.
Every year I'm like, I hate dry January. I would like to say, and then we'll move on. I'll say that one more time.
Oh my God.
This is the longest I've ever made it in dry January.
I was going to say, you've never completed dry January.
Not even close, bro. You'll get like a weekend and I'll be like, ah, it's stupid.
Yeah,
but this year, I don't know, something felt different this year. Like, I feel like I was going to challenge myself and like I was just going to do it. And I did it. I'm doing it. Well, I'm almost there.
Well, I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
Good job. So this podcast, we wanted to talk about relationships. Who would have thought? Uh-huh. No, but we wanted to talk about being in a relationship and having troubles and wanting to make it work and like how to navigate that. And also how to know when it's time to kind of hang it up and move on. Because I know that it's not easy to be in a relationship with someone that you love and to be having problems and to be having, you know, talking it through and wanting to fix things and work on things and not really seeing progress, but maybe feeling like you're having productive conversations or whatever the case may be. And feeling like, is this worth continuing or like when is it the time to leave? And like I know we preach about this all the time on the podcast. We're like, you know, if he's not treating you right, get the fuck out. And like obviously it's not so black and white because people are different, relationships are different, everything is dependent on the situation. Something that I've really struggled with in my life is knowing when it's time to leave. And obviously hindsight's always 20/20. When I look back on certain relationships, I can pinpoint the exact moment that I knew it was time to get the fuck out and I stayed.
Ignored it.
You know, the reason that we preach like leave if they're not treating you right and like recognize the signs and the red flags is because when you don't choose to leave, when you're seeing all of these signs and when you're just like, quite frankly, not happy anymore, it's so much harder for you. Not only do you put yourself through hell for like however many months and years longer than you could have, you then have to erase habits that you have now perpetuated far beyond what it should have been, and they're much harder to break, and the chemicals in your brain are much more attached
because you
this
just
person.
Took it too fucking far.
Yeah,
but that's kind of the hard part, is like how to know when to leave if somebody's toxic, but how to know when to leave if somebody's not toxic. Like,
yeah,
what if it's just not working? Because toxic red flags and a bad nasty relationship, like, you know you shouldn't be in it, you know you should leave,
yeah,
but you stay for a whole series of different reasons. How do you leave a relationship that isn't toxic? It's not a bad person, but you're just maybe not happy, or it's not the right person. Because I know we've preached, you know, you can't just walk away. If you walk away from every relationship that you're not happy in, you'll be walking away for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You're not going to be happy with the same person always forever. How do you know when it's just an incompatibility issue and it is actually time to move on and find a person that's better suited for you?
I think like my advice for this, and obviously I'm human and I'm still learning how to follow my own advice sometimes, but I think the best thing that I would recommend or that I would do in a situation would be to set a boundary within yourself. Like, you're having problems and you're communicating what you need and they're communicating what they need and you're working together to fix things. But when you get to a certain point where you're starting to question whether or not it's worth it to continue, I think you need to set a boundary within yourself. And if that boundary gets crossed, then that's where you draw the line and you have to leave. Like, for example, I'm not speaking about like cheating. Obviously, that's a huge boundary. Like,
right,
you should leave. I'm speaking more in terms of like, you have arguments, which is normal. All relationships have problems. You argue, you fight, that's normal. But if you feel like the way you fight isn't healthy because you want someone that can be mad at you nicely, right? So if you feel like your partner, after however many times it has happened, you tell them, hey, I really want us to work on this. And you give yourself like a 2 month span. And if it's not fixed within those 2 months, or you don't see progress, like actual progress, or them actually taking initiative, then you're leaving because that's what you told yourself. Or another example would be like, if you feel like your partner is not putting in effort with you and you ask them like, hey, I would really appreciate if you would start planning dates, or if you would start taking initiative for this, or start, you know, spending more time with me, or more quality time, or whatever it may be for your specific relationship, you give yourself a time frame. And if it doesn't change, or if you don't see the effort consistently, then that's when you make the decision to leave.
Well, absolutely, because that's when you start to realize maybe it's not an issue with the person, but it's just a compatibility issue. It's a communication issue. It's a love language issue. And unfortunately, as much as you might love someone, you have to realize you cannot change someone, and you shouldn't want to change someone. If your styles don't match up and you're not feeling seen, heard, understood, loved, cared for in those situations, maybe that person is just not right for you. And it's so hard to discern that in a healthy relationship, because like you said, in a healthy relationship, there is still going to be fighting. A healthy relationship does not mean that there's no fighting. It just means that there's still love when the fighting is over. And it's so hard to understand that, especially when you're in a new relationship with someone, if they get angry or you, like I said, have different love languages, and it feels like after the fight is over, there's not really like a lot of love or compassion or empathy left. You maybe start to realize this person does not love or receive love the same way that I do.
I would even argue that if there's not love and empathy during the argument, because absolutely, you know, arguing with your partner is one thing, but if you're with someone that's like belittles you, name calls you, or throws low blows at you, or just is so focused on winning the argument that they're not able to actually take a step back and see your perspective and like truly try to understand where you're coming from, even if they're upset with you, I mean, I just don't see how that is ever going to be a productive argument, because arguing with your partner should be productive to the relationship.
Well, it has to be someone who listens, right? And the thing about this is there are people out there who fighting like that, that works for them. Like there are relationships where that is not going to be a major issue or a boundary. And that is the type of person that they should go be with. Someone who doesn't get offended by being called names, someone who calls names back. Not that I'm saying that that's healthy, but
I'm like,
but this, or someone who, you know, doesn't get super offended by the fact that they didn't feel very heard and they can just kind of move on. They don't hold on to it. And that works for their relationship, so be it. But if you're feeling like your arguments are not productive and you're not understood and things are not changing, things are not progressing, because that's what a relationship is. It's progression changing over time together. You have to grow together or you grow apart.
I think a huge sign of compatibility in a relationship is how your partner treats you when they're mad at you. If they hurt your feelings in the middle of an argument, whether or not who's in the wrong, your feelings are now hurt. Your partner should care that they hurt your feelings even when they're mad at you.
Well, and I think that's such a good point, because if you look at your partner and you wouldn't want to be just like them, if you would be uncomfortable being like your partner, then you should not be with them.
100%, because that's basically saying that you aren't proud of the person that your partner is subconsciously. Like maybe you love them,
absolutely,
but you don't see it clearly. But if you can't answer that question and say you would be just like your partner, then that's a huge red flag.
Why would you want to be with someone who you wouldn't want to be like?
Yeah.
Like if you're ashamed or scared or sad or not proud of parts of your partner, not like I'm saying we're all perfect, but if there are things about your partner that you're like, I would never want that characteristic, you should really assess whether that's someone that you actually want in your life, because the characteristics that you don't like about them are going to leach into you, whether you like it or not.
And that actually just reminded me of something you said in the beginning about not wanting to change somebody. So there's, in my opinion, there's a difference between wanting to change like characteristics, beliefs, morals, values of your partner, which by the way, you cannot change. Like people don't just change, even if they may want to be with you or whatever. The things that they can change though are how they communicate, how they handle their emotions, how they treat you, how they show up for you. These are things that you might look at a relationship and say, we're not compatible because he's not meeting my needs because we can't communicate. Now, can that be fixed very easily? Probably not. But if someone wants to change that, they can. And that's not changing them. Asking your partner to be able to communicate with you better when they're upset, or, you know, speak to you nicely, or learn to handle their emotions in a more productive way for your relationship. Like those are things that you can work through with a partner. And that's where it gets confusing and hard, because at what point in your relationship, after telling them that you need this from them over and over again and it not changing, do you finally decide that it's just not going to change?
Absolutely.
Like how long do you wait? What is the indicator that it's not going to work? I think we all intuitively know. And the thing is I think we all know long before before we actually make the decision.
Absolutely. But you're just not ready to pull the trigger yet. Yeah. Because you're scared, you're unsure, you don't want to have regrets.
Well, and I think in a lot of cases too, like these problems that can be solved, these things that your partner can change, these things that you can work together on, you know, you hold out hope for your relationship because A, you want it to work or you wouldn't be there. B, you're like, these are things that we can fix. So why don't we fix them?
I saw this video of this alpha male type guy saying that women in his life had always tried to change him and he never thought that he needed to change. He never thought that anything was wrong with him until he met the right woman. And she held a mirror up in front of his face and said, these are the things that you need to change if you want to be with me. And he realized the things that she wanted him to change were things that he should change in order to be a better person, a better man, a better partner. She wasn't asking him to change who he was. She was asking him to change how he treated her. And he was able to realize that those were two very separate things.
Yeah. And like the unfortunate thing about that is you can't force somebody to make these changes. Like they have to want to. And honestly, I think a lot of it has to do with the timing in somebody's life. You know, like have they experienced enough to help aid them along this journey where they want to change these things? Or are they still living in like a sheltered world of their own where they don't see these things as a problem yet, you know?
Absolutely. And it's like, I think a lot of people get so hooked on the idea of like, this person's trying to change me and that's toxic. Mm. But in reality, you're not trying to change somebody's to their core.
Yeah.
You're not changing what they believe in if they believe in God. You're not changing how they treat their family. You're not changing what they do for work. You're not changing their core values or the core pieces of their life. You're changing the way that they communicate with you, the way that they help you, the way that they appreciate you, the way that they respond to you. Those are not characteristics. Those are learned habits. And that is the difference between a grown man and a little boy is a man that can discern, I am changing bad habits or I am changing who I am as a person.
Yeah. You know if a relationship is going to work or not based solely on how you fight. If you can't be mad at your partner and still be kind and loving and respectful, then you're not mature enough to be in a relationship.
I always say, you can always tell how much somebody loves themselves based on the partner that they've chosen to be with.
Self-love is such a funny thing too, because when somebody asks you if you love yourself, like obviously you want to say yes, because why would you not love yourself? But I think it's more of a subconscious, deeper rooted thing within you that is really hard to face, because the only reason people stay in relationships where they're truly treated like shit is if they have some sort of self-worth problem where they believe deep down subconsciously, like this is not a conscious thought that they're having, that they deserve that type of love.
They're unworthy of anything better.
Or like this is where they belong, or like this is okay. Even if you're not happy and you know that it's not right, I think people stay because they're afraid they're not going to find better. And that is rooted in lack mindset, which stems from self-worth issues.
Well, and I can definitely speak on how real that is and how really subconscious it is. Because when I was in the worst relationship of my life, like anyone who looked at that would have been like, she hates herself. Mm-hmm. I was still a confident, outgoing, happy person. And I never looked in the mirror and thought, God, I hate the person I am.
Yeah.
But when I look back on it, now that I've been through therapy and healed and am in a relationship that proves to me that I love myself now, I look at that girl and think, God, I really was not happy with the person I was. I was seeking external validation at all times. I was insecure. I was only confident based on the attention that other people gave me, not on the actual way that I felt about myself. Mm-hmm. And that is why I attracted someone and allowed someone to latch on to me that felt that way about me.
Yeah.
He knew that I was insecure and weak, even though I'm the strongest person. Mm-hmm. I'm so capable of doing whatever I want. But then I looked at the situation I was in and I realized I would never have let myself be treated like that if I thought I was worth any more than that.
Yeah. And same when I was in like a couple horrible relationships. I mean, I knew going into it that my mental health was really bad, that I was feeling insecure. I felt really unattractive. And then someone comes around, makes you feel pretty and loved. And then they start treating you like
shit. They say all the right things until they don't.
For me, it was like, well, my life was shitty before I met you. So it's like, what's so bad about being with you now? You know, like that was genuinely my mindset. And I even had an ex tell me, you need to love yourself. And I remember being like, fuck you, dude. You don't know anything about me. Literally looking back on that era of my life, though, like I don't even know who that girl was. She was so lost and sad and hurt and just had so much healing to do. And I think like, honestly, sometimes those really bad relationships can be such a good catalyst for change within yourself, but you have to want that for yourself. And sometimes it takes getting beaten to shit, not like literally, but figuratively, mentally, emotionally, before you're just like, you have nothing left besides like fixing it.
Well, and there's a lot of people that I'm sure feel like, especially people who are in those relationships right now, they're like, I don't see how I'm ever going to not feel like this about myself. Mm-hmm. But you said it best. It is a catalyst, a catapult. It pushes you to look in the mirror and think, why did I allow this? And what do I need to do so that this doesn't happen again in the future? It forces healing. It forces self-recognition. It forces you to go to therapy or whatever it is that you need to change. Or you stay in that situation and you don't. And that's kind of like what the human experience is about. You either change or you're stuck.
And can I just say, I have never seen a girl get out of a relationship and get uglier. She's always back in the gym, skin's on 10, hair's on 12, fucking glowing, her bag is up, like without fail, every single time.
Aura and back. She got that aura back.
Like, you get your light back when you get out of those situations. And I'm not saying all men do this, but when you get out of a relationship that's truly not meant for you, like, the glow up is just so insane every time.
You're so right. And a relationship should do nothing but add to your life. I mean, nothing but add. If your relationship is taking anything from you, it's probably not the relationship for that point in your life. And that is why you glow the fuck up when you get out of one, because you realize how much was actually being taken from you. Especially as women, we give and we give and we give and we give until there's nothing left. And you don't realize, even in a non-toxic relationship, but one that doesn't suit you, how much you've given, how much you've lost yourself. And you have a breath of fresh air and you're like, holy shit, I am actually pretty great. I'm capable of so much more, and I'm gonna go be a bad fucking bitch.
And something that I think is important to remember when going through a breakup is you will have that day where you wake up and you're like, holy shit, I'm back. And it'll be such a good day, but you have to get through the really hard days first. But I think if you're going through that, just keep that in mind, that one day you will wake up, you will be like, I can't believe I was even ever sad about that guy. And you will feel like, thank God this happened the way that it did, because I am so much happier now. And I know it's like probably not helpful to hear that when you're really in the thick of it, but it is like, it's such a canon event going through a breakup every single time. You always think it gets easier. It never does. It's always shitty. It always sucks, but you always come out better, more grounded, happier. I feel like being with the wrong person and being unhappy and, you know, just dealing with any type of those struggles, it really pushes you to want more for yourself and to want to be happier and like to figure out what actually makes you happy and what doesn't. And I think as you get older and you go through more of these experiences, you're just more likely to navigate and go towards those things. Whereas when you're younger and you're going through these things, you're still kind of trying to figure it out. But look at the situation you're in, like a blessing, even though it does not feel that way right now.
Well, and that's something that's so important for people to realize, you know, even if you're not young anymore, if you're older and you feel like you've lost so much time and you're still not in the right relationship or you're in a toxic relationship, you're not going to find the person that you're supposed to be with if you're not the person that you're supposed to be. Mm. You have to become the person that is deserving of the love that you want. And the only way that you're going to become that person is by healing and by growing. Mm-hmm. The person that's meant for you doesn't want the old version of you. That might sound really fucking harsh, but the man that I'm with now would never have fucking dated the girl that I was 10 years ago at all. The love that you deserve only comes when you're deserving.
And choosing to leave a bad situation is hard, especially when it's not necessarily a toxic situation. It's just not a good situation and it's not good for you. But even if you're in a healthy relationship and you can't communicate or you fight badly or they're not showing up for you, they're not really putting any effort in, allowing that to continue is a sign of your self-worth and your self-love. If you want to truly respect yourself, then you have to let people experience the consequences of disrespecting you. Even if it's not an outright disrespectful thing that they're doing, you're disrespecting yourself by staying. And sometimes, unfortunately, this is just the way it fucking goes. People don't realize what they have until it's gone. And people won't change until they're left with nothing, looking back on all that they had and realizing all of the shit they could have done to have the life that they had. It takes loss sometimes for people to really reflect and understand a situation, because when they're in it, they can't see it. You can tell them 100 times, I need this. This is making me feel this way. This, blah, 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 blah. You can talk until you're fucking blue in the face. They're not going to understand it until you're gone and they are thinking back on the relationship, like, where did I go wrong? Because they're missing you, because you treated them so amazingly. And then all of a sudden they have this revelation, like, she was telling me all of these things this whole time, and I was too fucking hard-headed and stubborn to listen. And it's unfortunate.
But this is the problem, is people get complacent. You know, it starts off like they do everything right and they try really, really hard and you're really impressed and really happy. And then you're together for a little bit longer and they get really comfortable and they stop doing the things that they used to do. They stop trying the way that they used to try. And that kind of leaves you wondering, like, is that who they always were? Or is that just who they are now that they're comfortable in the relationship? Do they have the capacity to get back to the person that I fell in love with?
Or does that person even exist?
Right. Or was that just a facade?
Yeah.
And this has always been a major fear of mine. Obviously, I've been in my relationship for a long time and I'm really, really happy, really grateful and really blessed to be in my relationship. But you look around you and you see divorce and breakups and people not staying together. 15 years, 20 years, 25 years. He cheated. She cheated. He spent all my money. We're breaking up. And like, to me, I have so much fear around things are so good right now. But do people really change to a point that you cannot be with them anymore after 25 years? Or is that always who they were and you just ignored it? Because it's so hard for me to imagine a world where me and my partner are not together and happy. The person he is a person that I will always want to be with.
Yeah.
How does it happen?
I think for sure people ignore signs. Like, you love someone, you want to build a family. A lot of times people rush into marriage. They rush into, like, you know, because they want the big house. They want the family. They want the kids. They want that, like, white picket fence, American dream lifestyle. And they meet someone. They're at that age. They decide, you know, let's just tie it down. I think generally that's the case. However, I think in some cases, like, people can grow apart. And it is scary. Like, I've never seen a healthy relationship work out in my entire life. And so I also have been in a pretty long-term relationship and I fell out of love. And, you know, I was young and you could sit here and we could talk about why I fell out of love. But in, you know, my mind, the relationship was so good. There was no real reason why. And so I wonder, like, I think because the relationship was so good and it was just, I got bored and I was like, I want to be single and I want to experience that, like, fiery, passionate love. And I don't feel that way anymore. I felt that way in the beginning and now it's gone because we've been together so long. Like, my fear is that you fall out of love because you lose that spark and that fire and that passion. And that's really where it comes down to, like, you choose to stay with that person and
you choose to fall back in love.
Yeah.
Because that's the terrifying part to me, is you see so much separation these days. It's almost like, are people just not trying anymore? Or where is the disconnect between previous generations that stayed together for 50 years and this generation? And like I said, I can't imagine a world where I felt that way, but you see it happen all the time. And I think for both sides, men and women, that's why it's so important. Never stop dating. Date each other until you're 90 years old. Do sweet things for each other, surprise each other, be thoughtful, care for each other in a deep way, even when you don't fucking feel like it. Take her out to dinner, take him golfing, do things that your partner loves to do, even if you don't really want to do them, because it makes them feel important and it makes your relationship still be a relationship and not just a roommate or a friendship. It's just scary because you never know when or why or how someone's going to change or what external factor is going to cause turmoil in your relationship.
Yeah. Like, for example, your relationship, I can't see, like, your partner changing or you changing. Like, I feel like you're both decent people with, you know.
Decent?
Well, like, good people.
Yeah.
I meant decent. Like,
I know what you mean.
Okay. Yeah, you're like, decent, all right. Yeah. You're like, meh.
You guys are mid.
Yeah. But the only thing I could see is, like, I know you want kids. And I also know that you're someone that doesn't want to put your kids in daycare. So you're going to be a stay-at-home mom. But I also know that you are someone that would legitimately go crazy being at home all of the time.
It's such a hard thought to think about giving up my freedom and the life that I've built for myself. And I think that's such a hard concept when you're so certain your entire life that you're going to have kids, because that's what everyone does and that's what you're supposed to do. That's what your hormonal internal clock tells you have to do. Procreation or we all die. Mm-hmm. So I've always thought kids. But as I get older and I look at other people with kids and I look at my life, I'm like, I don't fucking know about all of that. It's like you're giving up everything. And I could see me being at home with babies all day for 5 years straight. You can't go on a trip. You can't really go out to dinner. I mean, you can, but it's like you're worried about your kids. It's not the same thing. There's a babysitter.
Yeah.
Being fucking miserable.
Yeah. And like, obviously I do see some parents that like seem happy and like their kid seems really like well behaved and stuff. But even the couple that I'm thinking of right now, like I just got on Instagram earlier and I saw she was like, toddlers are fun. And it was like this plant broken with all of the ceramic pot, like shattered everywhere and just dirt everywhere, like ran through the house. And I'm like, you're really just signing up to like seriously sell your entire life and everything, all of your free time, all of your freedom, all of your mental capacity to this baby and to this person that you're bringing onto this planet. And unless you're willing to do that, I don't think you should have kids, you know?
I understand that it's so rewarding. It's the most rewarding thing in the world, bringing a life into the world and raising it and teaching it to be it. Teaching them to be what you think a good person should be and being proud. And I mean, I get that. But also, I love my life. I have so much fun with my partner.
Yeah.
We have the freedom to do whatever we want. And I just feel like if we lost that, it would be really difficult to like find the center of our relationship again.
Yeah.
Because you've built this relationship.
It would change for sure.
Yeah. On each other and on your friendship and on your, and I know that we would make it through anything, but it's just, I could see how difficult it would be. I actually saw like a psychologist the other day say, do not get divorced the first year after you get married, or the first year after you have a kid, or when you're remodeling a house. Those are the three times that you're not allowed to get divorced, because things are not the same as they would be, should be, or will be in the future. And it's just kind of terrifying because there's so much societal pressure to have kids.
Yeah.
And mental pressure.
Yeah. Well, I'm someone that's never really wanted kids, but I've always like deep down felt like when that day came, I would probably want kids when I met the right person. Like I would naturally just want it because, you know, that's what we're taught to want. And that's what everyone does. And like, I'm a child of someone that had a kid and I wouldn't be here, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But as the day approaches more, I'm like, I still don't feel like I have that. Not that I don't have a maternal instinct, like I think I would be a good mother, but I just don't know if it's something that I want. And I'm hesitant to like bring, like Madison made a good point, we were talking about this off camera, that'd be like me not liking dogs or not wanting a dog and then like going and getting a dog.
Getting a puppy.
It doesn't make a lot of sense to have a kid when you don't really have the desire to have one. But there's also the other side of me that is afraid that I'll be missing out on something or that I'll regret it one day. And like, it's something that you can't take back after a certain age. You can't just decide, oh, at 50, oh, I want a kid now. But then on the other side of things, you can't have a kid and then take it back either.
Like, it's not like you could just give it away. Yeah. You know, it's not selfish to not want kids. It's selfish to have kids when you're not sure that you wanted them.
Yeah. Because the child and the human being that you're bringing onto this planet deserves everything. They deserve your full emotional support, your financial support, you to go to all of their games, you to support all of their hobbies, you to teach them right from wrong, you to be there for them when they're upset, you to be excited for them when they're happy, you to cook them dinner, make them lunch, travel soccer tournaments, like meet their friends, parent-teacher conferences. Like it's consuming. It will consume your entire life.
And it's also the end of the era of the relationship that you had with your partner. Not that I'm saying you and your partner are going to break up,
right.
But the relationship that you had
is no longer about the two of you.
It's now gone, yeah. Because there is now a third or fourth or fifth or sixth person, god damn, in that relationship. And you have to mourn the loss of the relationship with that person in the way that it was, because it won't be that way again, at least for another 20 years. So you have to be willing to change, completely change everything about your life and your relationship. And is that worth it? That's the question for me, because I'm so fucking happy.
Mm-hmm.
Do I really want to change it?
I mean, you could look at it from the other side and say, like, will it add to my life or will it just be taking away because you're so happy? And just like a partner, like you pick something, someone that's adding to your life. Is this something that you see adding to your life, like to your happiness, to your the value that it brings, you know?
The last thing I would ever want would to be stuck with regret that I didn't do it.
Yeah.
But I don't think fear of regret should be a reason to have children.
I feel like you will have kids.
Yeah.
I feel like you'll just have them later.
40? Can I have kids at 40?
Yeah. Well, it sucks because it's like, I probably would, if it was like 45 was the age, like, okay, I probably could do that.
That sounds good.
Because I've lived
yeah.
half my life. Like my best years are gone.
Well, and people are always like, have kids young. That way you have freedom in your 30s, 40s. You know, they're older. They can take care of themselves. But I'm like, that's the most ridiculous notion to me, because not only are you broke in your 20s, but you're also the youngest hottest and saddled with the least responsibility that you're ever going to have. Yeah. I'm like, let me enjoy my 20s, get my bread up in my 30s, and have kids then when I'm emotionally mature enough to handle it and also like want to handle it. You think I have a kid when I was 21 years old?
Yeah. I 100% agree. Having kids in your 20s, it's like your prime. Even your 30s is still your prime. So it's hard to want that. But I do feel like you will end up having kids. And we were talking about this off camera, but you know, we used to party a lot and we were in college. We were young. We were in our early 20s. And I remember me and Madison used to wonder like, when do you grow out of this? Because we didn't ever see that day happening where we didn't want to party because that was like what we liked to do. That was who we were. And then now we're 26 and 27 and neither of us like to party anymore. And it kind of just happens. Like you just wake up one day.
You grow out of it.
And you're just kind of over it. And I feel like by the time you are 30 or 32, 33, maybe that will happen with the kid thing. Maybe you will reach that phase of your life where you feel, okay, I'm ready to settle down and I'm ready to have a baby and I'm ready to grow my family. You know what I mean? Like you also have to keep in mind you and your partner, yes, you're engaged, but you haven't really been together that long.
No.
So maybe once you're together for, you know, however many years and it's just the two of you, maybe then you'll be ready to expand.
That's such a good way to look at that because we're still in our fucking honeymoon phase. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've been together for 2 years. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, really a blimp on the timeline.
100%.
And you're absolutely right. There probably will come a point where we're ready to let go of that version of our life.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not right now.
Yeah.
And I, as much as I feel like 27 is an appropriate age to start having kids, to me, that feels like the ultimate blunder. Like, I would not have a kid right now. Mm-hmm. I just wouldn't. That doesn't even sound, that sounds like not even, like, possible. Like, I still feel like I'm 20 in some ways.
Yeah, the fact that we're at an age, we've been at an age where it's, like, okay to have kids, just...
We're getting late.
Does not compute in my brain.
No, like, in some people's eyes, we are pushing it.
Yeah.
You know, 20...
Well, because 30 is when your fertility starts to decline.
22 to 26 is really, like, the prime. And I'm like, that's so fucked up.
What, did we just put on this earth literally to reproduce?
Well, and that's the way it used to be, right? That's what women were looked at, is just baby-making machines. Now that we have so much more freedom and so much more possibility, that's why it's been pushed later and later and later and later. And it does make me, what you just said to me, wow, good advice. You should start a podcast. Gave me some comfort because it's like, do I want to be the person that I was when I was 21? No. Do I want to party like that? God, no.
Yeah.
So maybe when I'm like 30, 31, 32, I'll look at 26 and be like, 26, I wish. I'll look at 27 and be like, wow, I travel a lot. Wow, me and my partner had so much fun. Life was really good and carefree and easy.
But I wouldn't want to live that life anymore.
I'm ready to move on.
And I think it's true because, you know, we grow into a new person. I feel like every year, like a new, like
you're
part of you.
A hermit crab, you're shedding.
Yeah, like hatches. And I think for someone like you who, I don't know about me. I mean, I hope that one day, because like I would like to partake in that. I would like to want to do it.
We need our little babies to walk around together.
But I think for you, someone who's always wanted kids, I think you will reach that age. I just don't think you're that person that wants kids yet, but I think that the person's in you.
I think that's really insightful of you.
Thank you. I should start a podcast.
Well, on that note, happy episode 47. 47
is lucky number.
Both of our lucky numbers. It's goddamn 47.
We just discovered that it's both of our lucky numbers, which is so interesting. And there's so many numbers in the world.
I know. Like, that's actually really random. Mm-hmm. We didn't even talk about how weird
that
was.
I know.
It's not even surprising, though.
No, we're just like locked in. Yeah.
It's been a journey, and I'm glad to be back. Happy New Year. Enjoy our special guests. We're going to be doing more of that.
Yes.
We've got a couple of potential guests lined up. So we're excited. We love your feedback. We love you guys. And we'll see you next week.
See you next week, baddies. Bye.
Mwah.
Okay.